I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. The Seattle Times isn't even trying to tell the truth anymore. Their latest lie-filled article focuses on the initiative to protect girls' sports. Plus, a bill passed by Democrats in Washington state would dramatically expand the investigative authority of the Office of Attorney General. And the state of Florida focuses on helping kids work through disagreements with words, not violence. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Gosh, I'm exhausted. Being a truth teller is, actually, it's not difficult. It really is quite easy. But for some reason, the Seattle Times quite literally is incapable of telling the truth. Dun. Burr, 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 burr. There it is, right in the trash, birdcage liner, however you want to use it. Any option would be better than reading it, I promise you that. So we are about to the end of the legislative session, which means as soon as March 12th is over and it's signy-die and the session is done, then in earnest, we are going to start a war of information, and in some cases, a war of disinformation and misinformation that's already been going on, but it will start in earnest. And it will have to do with the two Let's Go Washington initiatives. Of course, those were initiatives to the legislature. Democrats said, no, we're not giving them hearings, we're not voting them into law. So that means they go to voters in November. It's the initiative to protect girls' sports and the initiative to restore parental rights in education. If you look at any sort of polling on any of these issues, these ideas are overwhelmingly popular, even in very blue areas. Like, no, girls shouldn't have to compete against boys. And yes, parents have a right to know what's happening with their kids at school. You shouldn't be keeping secrets from parents. But you take issues that have overwhelming support, and then you muddy the water. You muddy the information. You get the teachers' union that's going to spend millions of dollars on the airwaves to paint people who support these ideas as hateful, horrible bigots. And then they're going to get their friends in the news media to do the same. And they're going to just toe the party line. They're going to say exactly what Democrats and ideologues want them to say about these issues, because this is what they do. And the Seattle Times has already started this. So they have an article up, "Law Voters to See Ballot Initiative Aimed at Trans Girls in Sports." Just the headline itself. The idea here is to vilify. The idea is to say it's against trans girls, rather than it being for girls. It's aimed at trans girls in sports. No, it's about protecting girls. I mean, all these media outlets, they used to be so pro-woman, so pro-girls, so pro-women's rights. Oh no, but you can't do it here. So just the headline in and of itself shows you how this fight is going to play out. They're going to paint us as being hateful and bigoted toward a small subset of athletes in the state of Washington. But when you read on, it gets even worse from there. And it shows you how the Seattle Times, and you'll see it in other news outlets as well, they're not going to question what they're told by the ideologues. They're going to share it as fact. So it says, for most Washington public school students, a sports physical is a brief ritual, a stethoscope pressed to the chest, a few questions about injuries, a vision test, and a physician's signature clearing them for the first practice. A recently certified state initiative could turn that routine screening into something far more invasive and subjective. It's like, okay, so they're already, that's the chief lie that's being told. Oh, they're going to pull down your kids' pants and look at their genitals. It's just crazy. And here it is in the second sentence of a story from the newspaper of record in the state of Washington. It says, Initiative IL-26-638, expected to appear statewide on the November ballot, would require students who want to compete in girls' sports to provide documentation from a healthcare provider to, quote, verify their biological sex. Here's this, again, this is a sentence in a news article presented as fact. It is an effort to keep transgender girls from competing. That's just literally not true. They're boys and they can compete with the boys. They're boys who can compete with the boys. No one's trying to stop them from competing. But like 80% of the population believes, we just want them to compete in the sport category that aligns with their biological gender. And just the fact that the Times is calling them girls still. Girls, girls, girls. No, boys, boys, boys. You're making a conscious decision in that moment to lie to your readers and to say these are girls when in fact they're biological boys. And that's just a truth. It's just a truth. And then you say we want to stop them. It's, what does the headline say? Aimed at trans girls. Effort to keep transgender girls from competing. They're painting you as evil bigots. They're painting you as evil bigots. Do not let them do it. And then, of course, they're going to cherry pick who they talk to for articles like these. It says, under current standards of care, sports physicals focus on identifying conditions that could endanger a student during competition. Cardiac abnormalities, concussion history, asthma, orthopedic risk. They do not include blood testing, hormone panels, genetic analysis, or internal pelvic exams for healthy adolescents, pediatricians say. Quote, it is not required or part of my practice to do a hernia exam unless there are concerns that are specifically brought up around that, said Dr. Glenna Martin, a Washington board certified pediatrician. That's not even on the form for most of the physicals I've done. The Seattle Times goes on to quote from this doctor, Dr. Glenna Martin. As a medical student, Martin volunteered at large-scale physical events for students without regular providers. Quote, there wasn't any capacity to do blood draws, and we were definitely never doing genital exams. Keep that sentence in mind. We were definitely never doing genital exams. Then they go on to quote Dr. Lila Rabe, executive director of the Washington chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, said neither blood tests nor pelvic exams are included in sports physicals under current standards of care. Quote, they would certainly not do a blood test, and a pelvic exam is never conducted as part of a sports physical. So there the Seattle Times has two doctors saying genital exams? Oh my God, we would never do that. Never is the word. Definitely never doing genital exams. Never conducted as part of a sports physical. But if the Seattle Times had done some basic due diligence and maybe asked a school district to provide the form that it gives to parents for a physical examination prior to participating in sports, they would have found out that indeed a genital exam is part of a basic sports physical. Here's a form. This is the current form for the North Shore School District, which is in a very progressive place in Washington State. Here's what it looks like. It's pretty basic. Up at the top, male or female. And it says that the form has to be completed by medical authorities licensed to give physical examinations. So it says that can be a doctor, it can be a certified nurse practitioner, etc. But the first thing is male or female. Okay? Is it a girl or a boy? And then it has a short checklist of what they're going to assess. Head, eyes, teeth, chest, lungs, heart, abdomen, genitalia. It's right there on the form. They already do it. And then there's some pre-participation history questions on the next page that if the genital part of a regular physical exam didn't help you figure it out. These might help you figure it out. Do you have any organs missing other than tonsils? So let's say you have a child that had an actual gender reassignment surgery. Well, yeah, they'd have to check yes or no on that one. Are you presently taking any medications? Well, if you've got a child who's on puberty blockers or hormone therapy or something, well, that's a big clue. And then it has this big, in all caps, females. Have you any menstrual problems? So, in theory, only actual biological girls would have menstrual problems. So this form, as it exists today, the current physical form for a student who wants to participate sent to us by their parent in the North Shore School District would be able to tell schools if it's a boy or a girl. This form would meet the criteria that the initiative would lay out in law. Here is the text of the initiative. A student who elects to participate in individual or team competition activities intended for female students only governed under this subsection of this section shall provide, as part of the required routine sports physical exam, a health examination and consent form or other statement signed by the student's personal health care provider that verifies the student's biological sex, relying on only one or more of the following: the student's reproductive anatomy, genetic makeup, or normal testosterone levels. So if for some reason they don't want to undergo a physical exam, a regular routine physical exam, sports physical already required by the state, then they could go in and say, oh, well, I'll send you a genetic makeup. But nobody's going to do that. They're just going to rely on the physical exam. So again, let's put these side by side. So here's the current form as provided by the North Shore School District to a parent who right now has to have their kid take a physical examination to participate in sports. Up next to the initiative to protect girls' sports, it just says, as part of the routine sports physical exam, your doctor has to attest to whether you're a biological boy or a biological girl. And they wouldn't have to change a thing about their current physical. It already has on there, check, male or female. And then as part of what they're already examining, genitalia is included in that. But you know what? It doesn't even really have to go that far because your child's doctor knows if it's a boy or a girl. Why are we complicating an issue that is so simple? Your child's doctor, their pediatrician knows, and they have known since the moment they were born, whether it's a boy or a girl. And now all they have to do as a doctor is tell the truth. Check, boy. Check, girl. Because at some point in your child's life, the pediatrician has already seen their genitals. I know that's really difficult to fathom. That a doctor is going to do what a doctor needs to do to monitor your child for healthy development, puberty, all of these things. This is basic stuff. Every single one of your children, if they've gone to a pediatrician, the pediatrician has seen their genitals. Let's be adults here. It's not a creepy thing. It's not a weird thing. It's a medical thing. And it's already being done. But the Seattle Times wants you to believe that, oh my gosh, this is going to be totally different than what's happening now with kids. And I just proved that it's not. But what's the motivation of these doctors to tell the Seattle Times? What was the quote they said that I've just disproven very simply? Oh my gosh, a genital exam is never conducted as part of a sports physical. We were definitely never doing genital exams, said the doctor Glenna Martin, a Washington board certified pediatrician, which I just proved she's lying there. Why would she lie? Well, here she is, Glenna C. Martin, MD. She, her, accepting new patients, Seattle Roots Community Health. Interesting. Okay, well, she, her, just because she uses pronouns doesn't mean she's steeped in radical gender ideology. But let's search Ingersoll, which is a gender center, and it's an organization that was set up for, by and for transgender and nonconforming people, providing mutual support through peer-led support groups, advocating and navigating resources, community organizing, and education, all in the pursuit of our collective self-determination. So Ingersoll is basically a database where if you're a kid or someone who's transgender or wants gender care, you can search the database for a doctor who provides it. Well, let's see. Tippy type, type, tip, 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 type, type in the search function. Glenna Martin. She's a gender doctor. She provides gender care. Do you think the Seattle Times said that when they quote her in the article as saying, oh, this is going to change things. We don't do genital exams. This is going to require us to do genital exams. You think the Seattle Times thought to mention, maybe we should mention that she does gender care for teens? Nope, they didn't mention it at all. No mention whatsoever. Maybe they didn't know. Maybe they didn't bother to do just a quick little Google search like Nicole did to find out that the person they're quoting saying, we never do genital exams as part of a routine sports physical is an ideologue, is a she-her ideologue who provides gender care and whose name is listed, and you have to opt into this, whose name is listed on a database that helps connect teens to doctors who will perform gender care for them. So don't believe her. Don't believe me. Believe what schools are doing right now. Believe the document that I just showed you that is the current sports physical form for one of a school district in one of the most progressive areas of Washington state that says on there that as part of the routine sports physical, they check the genitalia and they check male or female. That's all we need. It's not complicated. Your doctor knows if you're a man or a woman, but these sorts of lies are going to continue. These sorts of lies are going to be pushed as truths in the legacy news media because they side with the radical ideology. Think about this. 80%, I would argue it's more than that, but let's just be generous toward the ideologues. 80% of people believe that boys shouldn't compete in girls' sports. And I think that number grows by the day. Yet the Seattle Times pushes the narrative of the 20% of extremists, fringe radicals. That's who the Seattle Times serves. Why? Nicole, is it because the Seattle Times is trash? I think so. I am going to do this. I think I'll do this tomorrow. I'm going to launch an initiative where if you show me that you've canceled your Seattle Times subscription, I will give you a free subscription to Undivided for an entire year. Because it's not just about like, okay, I'll lose a little money doing that. That's fine. However, we're going to save our state in the process. The fewer people who read the Seattle Times, the better off our state will be. And while we're at it, let's throw King 5 News in there. The fewer people who watch King 5 News, the better our state will be. So King 5 News is at it again. First of all, I gassed up this morning. $5.01 per gallon. And I was like, oh my God. Now, I'm a smart person. I think we can all be reasonable. Do I believe that the conflict in Iran is going to raise our gas prices in the United States? Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And I think we're already seeing a little bit of that. That's okay. I'm willing to acknowledge that something that a president did who I voted for could impact gas prices here. But you know what the bigger driver of gas prices is? Our taxes and the Climate Commitment Act, by far. It's not even close. Yet you had all these news stations. The day the Climate Commitment Act took effect and the first auction of the climate carbon credits, how much did gas go up? It was like 46 cents overnight. Do you think that King 5 and all the news stations were out there like, oh my gosh, gas is so expensive, telling sob stories of drivers? Of course not. Here's King 5 News, though, when gas goes up 2 cents after the strikes in Iran. Washington gas prices rise again amid Middle East conflict hitting Seattle drivers and nonprofits. And it was talking about the average a month ago and where it's at, but it had a headline that was up on X that talked about how it's up 2 cents. 2 cents. Just absolutely insane. So it says Washington State's average gas prices climbed another 2 cents per gallon Wednesday as tensions in the Middle East continue to push fuel costs higher, squeezing both individual drivers and nonprofit organizations that rely on the road to serve vulnerable communities. Just first of all, wrap your mind around this. I'm okay, first of all, with King 5 or any news station talking about a rise in gas prices. Gas prices impact every single one of us. I would be a hypocrite if I said, cover the rise in gas prices over the CCA, cover the rise in gas prices because they increase the gas tax, but don't talk about the rise in gas prices over Iran. I would be a total hypocrite. I'm okay with the news covering anything that is contributing to a rise in gas prices. My problem is the selective coverage. Here they are, a 2 cents increase, and they're out there sending reporters to talk to drivers. Ryan Merck, who stopped at the Gold gas station on 4th Avenue in Seattle's SoDo neighborhood Wednesday, said he ended up there simply because he was running low and it was the closest option. Mid-grade fuel there was listed at $4.79 per gallon. His fill-up for 10 gallons came to $51.57. He said, it's gotten expensive. King 5 says the financial strain isn't limited to his personal budget. Merck works for a homeless shelter and said rising fuel costs are creating ripple effects for the nonprofit's operations. Quote, the cost of when we go to pick up for our homeless shelter, it's gotten very expensive for everyone involved, he said. All the food from grocery stores getting transported and the cost of gas goes up. We have to pick it up. They go on to say rising fuel costs make every mile more expensive for drivers across the state. And analysts say there is little relief in sight while the Middle East conflict continues. For Merck, the uncertainty about how long gas prices will remain elevated is almost as frustrating as the cost itself. Quote, I'm going to have to start looking for which places have the cheapest gas, he said. The price is surprising. The question is this the way it's going to be? Were you asking that question, sir, a month ago, 6 months ago, a year ago? Were you asking that question when the Climate Commitment Act drove up the cost of gas overnight by nearly 50 cents a gallon? I don't know. Maybe you were. But I know who wasn't. King 5 News. King 5 wasn't out. We went back and we searched and we searched and we searched. when the Climate Commitment Act took effect and the carbon auctions began and the predictions from sane people came true and overnight gas was almost 50 cents per gallon higher, King 5 wasn't out at the pumps. They weren't out there like, what do you think about Governor Inslee's climate policy driving up the cost of gas? No, they wouldn't even acknowledge. Remember, for years, Governor Inslee said, oh, it won't increase gas prices. And the media just went with what he was saying. And then when gas prices went up, and it was happening at the same time as the auctions, the carbon auctions, they would say, oh, they'd couch it and say, opponents say that gas is going up because of the CCA. Oh, but nobody can prove it. It's insane. That's what I have a problem with. And for anyone, this is a great graphic. I think it was sent out by the Washington State House Republicans. Just a factual graphic that shows why our gas prices are so much higher comparatively to the rest of the nation. When you look at the taxes, federally, all the same, 18 cents. Every state pays the same federal excise tax on gasoline, so that doesn't change. What changes? State taxes, fees, and carbon taxes. For every gallon of gas you get in the state of Washington, you pay $1.29 in state taxes and fees. There are some states where a gallon of gas is almost less than what it costs here per gallon just to pay the taxes. So by all means, let's just be adults. I'm okay. Let's talk about what Iran is going to do for gas prices. I'm sure it's going to get worse from here. But as news stations, are you caring as much about that and informing people as much about that as you are about the continued impact the Climate Commitment Act has on gas prices? And how much we pay in gas taxes and fees compared to other states in the nation? That's all I ask for is some consistency. Inform people about what's happening, absent any sort of political ideology or considerations. That's what you're supposed to do, but you're not doing it. And you haven't been doing it for a very long time. It's just outrageous. All right, so there continues to be this sort of up-in-the-air question about whether the income tax is going to pass this session in Washington State. And I will say the eyes of the nation are on this. The national papers continue to publish op-eds about the millionaire's tax, the income tax. A lot of entrepreneurs in tech, AI, they continue to speak out against it. Major corporations, Starbucks announcing that it's moving. Well, not moving, allegedly, but opening a headquarters in Tennessee. I think we know why they're doing that and expanding their footprint in that way. And so Governor Bob Ferguson has come out in the news. We discussed this yesterday and said, well, you know, maybe we're running out of time. Maybe the income tax waits till next year. I think that's very unlikely, although we'll do everything we can to continue to try to point out the disastrous impact of passing this income tax for now, which will target millionaires. This is a really good graphic from the Tax Foundation that shows what will happen and where it will place Seattle specifically as a city in the context of other major cities across the country when it comes to the top income tax rate. At the top, we would overnight become the most expensive city for wealthy people to live in as a percentage of their income that's being paid to some sort of tax. So this would be the top marginal combined state and local income and payroll tax rate on wages and restricted stock units under the proposed Washington millionaire's tax. So if it takes effect, if you're a millionaire in Seattle, you're going to be paying 18% of your money to the government. That's higher than even New York City. New York City would be 14.7%. 18%. And again, think about all the things that impacts. It's like the AI innovators who apparently are going to meet with the governor now, or the governor's staff, at least the policy staff. They sent a big letter. It was published in the Wall Street Journal saying, we're not going to come there and do anything related to AI. And you're going to lose all these innovators. And I think that's good. I hope the governor's staff listens to them. But this is the reason why. Money matters. You might have a rare, random millionaire who's like, I'd love to pay more taxes. And they just want to pat themselves on the back. And I'm just such a good person. Good for you. Then pay more taxes. No one's stopping you from writing a check to the Treasury. You can literally do that. You can put them in your, you can put the tax man in your last will and testament, by all means. But for most people who are trying to build a business, they're trying to build wealth. And they're not going to be able to do it in Seattle. and they can go to places and keep millions of additional dollars per year, they're going to do it. It just makes sense. And then it's like, well, what are we getting for that, right? When you look at if Seattle becomes overnight the most expensive city in the nation from a tax perspective, look, if our city was just humming, I'd be like, okay, like, oh my gosh, we got the best schools in the nation. The streets aren't filled with homeless people and drug addicts. We don't have a crime issue. We're not short on police officers. Affordability's pretty good. Then I'd be like, hey, you know, the government's doing a lot with the money we give it. But of course, that's not the case. You know, one of their biggest justifications that they're using for the millionaire's tax is what? Education. Because they know that that sells well. It's for the kids. It's for the kids. It's for the schools. Now, if we had a situation where, oh my God, we're just cranking out academics. We're just cranking out high achievers. Like, look at us. I'd be like, all right, maybe we do give the schools a little bit more money, even though they have doubled the amount per pupil that they're spending in the state of Washington over the last 10 to 12 years. But that's not what's happening. Check this out. From the National Assessment of Educational Progress, changes to fourth grade reading scores from 2002 to 2024, and it's comparing the state of Washington and the state of Mississippi. Oh yes, all those dumb inbred hicks in Mississippi, Washington, we're so much better than them. We're so much more enlightened than them. We're so much more educated than them. Well, then why is this happening? Why is this happening? Back in 2002, we were seventh nationally. It was a four-way tie, but we were ranked seventh nationally for fourth grade reading scores, which, as you know, is a critical juncture that they sort of use to compare states across the board. Where was Mississippi? 50th, last in the nation for reading scores for fourth graders. Let's go forward about 20 years. Where are we now? Well, Mississippi has taken our spot. They are now seventh in the nation when it comes to fourth grade reading scores, and we have dropped. We are now in a nine-way tie, 13th in the nation, specifically for fourth grade reading scores. How much does Mississippi spend per pupil? $12,000. How much does Washington State spend per pupil to do worse? $20,000. And you can argue that, well, that's because Washington's just a more expensive place to live and, you know, inflation and all these things. We used to spend about what Mississippi spends and we got better results. Now we spend twice that and we get worse results. And so we know no data, there is no data to indicate that the success of our students academically is directly proportionate to how much money we spend on their education. In fact, quite the opposite. The more bloated we have made the school district's budget, the worse the outcomes have been. And it's similar in so many other regards. We spend more on homelessness than we ever have before, and the homeless crisis has gotten worse. We spend more fighting substance abuse. The drug crisis has gotten worse. Virtually anything our state government decides to spend more money on gets worse. And it's because they're just bloating government. They're bloating their bureaucracy. And they actually create these infrastructures where failure is rewarded with funding. Failure is tied to funding. And they've convinced a whole segment of voters that if we have a problem, money and big government will fix it. So we just got to give big government more money. And it never works, yet voters continue to vote for that. Why? Donald Trump bad. That's what it all comes down to at the end of the day. Donald Trump bad. And then they continue to put into office the most deeply dishonest people. Look, a liar is a liar. If the liar's on the right or the liar's on the left, I genuinely don't care. But we have to get back to a place as a country where we're willing to call a liar a liar, where we're willing to call a lie a lie. But in Washington State, Democrats feel so secure in this bubble that they're in because it's vote blue no matter who, that they can just lie. Not even correct the lie, not even apologize for the lie. They just let the lie sit and they get reelected anyway. Senator Monica Dingra, who I believe is the third most dishonest person in Olympia. I'll let you guess on who the other two are. You could probably fill in the gaps pretty quick. She voted to pass the income tax on Senate Bill 6346. There she is. She's a yay. Voted with members of her own party to pass a statewide income tax. Yet today on her campaign website, if you go to it, the Q&A section, says, do you support an income tax? I do not support the implementation of a state income tax. Today. Now, she was saying that last time she was running for re-election because she serves a suburb of Bellevue, which is a very business-friendly area of the state. And so this was this key issue. If you're elected, will you support a statewide income tax? The business community didn't want it. So, of course, she said, and she said this in news interviews, and it was printed in the Seattle Times, no, I don't support a statewide income tax. She says, I do not support the implementation of a state income tax, and such a policy has been deemed unconstitutional. So she literally says on her own website, nah, that's unconstitutional. I don't support that. And then she votes for it anyway. So she's admitting she voted for something that's unconstitutional. And she doesn't even care. People pointed this out yesterday. She hasn't taken it down. She doesn't care. She's proud of it. She doesn't, there's no consequence for her electorally. And nothing in our state will change until Democrats fear electoral consequences. When that day will come, I don't know. Maybe it's when Donald Trump's out of office and the big bad orange man isn't looming at the top of the ticket. But I, for one, am very sick of watching a once great, economically thriving, beautiful state disintegrate all in the name of not voting for a party that has Donald Trump at the top of the ticket. It's just wild. All right, coming up next, we're going to tick through a couple bills that were just passed in Olympia. One of them is really scary, and we frankly have not focused on it enough. First, a whole bunch of you have taken the First Mark challenge with our friends at First Mark Insurance to have them take another look, fresh set of eyes on your insurance. And if you're like me, I mean, I learned a lot from the First Mark challenge in that process. I learned that we had some insurance we didn't need, so we were paying for something that we didn't need. And I also learned that we didn't have some things covered that we really needed to have covered. And so we were underinsured in some areas, which is a scary thing when you work really hard for everything that you have. And so First Mark helped us figure everything out, explained it to us in a way that we could understand. And then I was like, I love you guys. So I use them for Undivided as well. We're insured through First Mark. And the nice thing is we hear this from so many people, whether they get their business insurance through First Mark or their home personal insurance through First Mark, is usually come away saving some money. Robin says she did it. She's saving $100 a month, which is $1,200 a year. We also heard from a woman who saved $10,000 a year by switching insurance over from her two businesses to First Mark. So it's just a no-brainer. If you're looking for ways to save money as a family, there's no downside to it. It's totally free to take the First Mark challenge. And they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind, even if that means they turn away your business because they cannot beat the price or the coverage of your current insurance. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, let's take through some bills that continue to advance in Olympia and look like they are going to become law. Senate Bill 5925 is terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Now, we knew the Attorney General, Nick Brown, was making some efforts to get Democrats to expand his investigative authority. But the way this bill has come out is genuinely, I mean, it should send a shiver down your spine. So this dramatically expands the ability of the Attorney General, not in criminal cases, but if he basically believes that you've done something or you have information on a case they're looking into that constitutes a violation of the U.S. Constitution or the state constitution, he can basically demand anything, to take anything from you that he might need as part of his investigation. Let me just read it to explain it better to you. So it says, the Attorney General may issue written civil investigative demands for documents, oral testimony, and answers to written interrogations when facts and circumstances would reasonably lead to possible violations of the United States Constitution, the Washington State Constitution, or state law. Read that again. The Attorney General may issue written civil investigative demands when facts and circumstances would reasonably lead to possible violations of the Constitution or state law. So like what? The Attorney General just thinks, I think that person's violating state law. I'm going to bring them in. I'm going to demand documents. I'm going to demand videos. I'm going to demand to see the text messages on their phone because I have reason to believe that what I find could lead to possible violations of the Constitution, state and federal. It says, whenever the Attorney General believes that any this is a quote, whenever the Attorney General believes that any person or entity may be in possession, custody, or control of any original or copy of any book, record, report, memorandum, paper, communication, tabulation, map, chart, photograph, mechanical transcription, or other tangible document or recording, which he or she believes to be relevant to the subject matter of an investigation of a possible violation of state or federal law. He can compel you to give it to him. Any person or entity with basically anything in your possession, a photograph, a transcript, a text message, he can now compel you to give it to him to investigate a possible violation of state or federal law? How is that even, speaking of constitutional violations, how is that even constitutional? So you haven't been accused or even convicted of doing anything wrong, but the attorney general now has the power to, oh, because he suspects something, not maybe not even that you did, that somebody else did, hasn't been proven by any sort of standard, because he has suspicions, he can compel you to give him basically anything in your possession, tangible or intangible? That's insane. Democrats are set to pass that. I don't think that's, somebody has to challenge that. I don't think that's constitutional. I mean, that is some dictator shit. That is wild. Another bill that moved forward, and this one does the opposite. This one does actually nothing. This one literally does nothing, but you know what it does? Makes them feel good about themselves. Makes them feel really nice about themselves. Senate Bill 5855, unmasking those Gestapo federal agents. What's crazy about this is it has no impact on federal agents. They want ICE to stop wearing masks out in the community. So they've passed this bill barring facial coverings from police officers. The only people it'll impact are local police because they can't force federal agents to do or not do anything. And they know that. They've known that. They've been told that. But they're going to do it and they're going to say it's about ICE and protecting communities from ICE and stopping ICE agents from hiding their face. And it literally won't change ICE agents hiding their face. Now, I asked you guys in our daily show poll because, look, I think this is a reasonable people can disagree on this issue. Do you want police officers hiding their faces? I asked you in our subscriber show poll on Patreon Locals and X. Do you believe local police officers should be able to cover their faces during interactions with the public? Like if you were pulled over, would you want a police officer to have their face hidden? Yes or no, Nicole?
Well, no. But but you know, they're not all just pulling over people who are speeding. I mean, right. Some of them are going into dangerous situations, and I'm okay with those people having masks on. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I understand concern. It's not as easy as yes or no. But I'd be okay with this law if it gave a carve-out for riots or civil unrest or a police officer who has reason to believe that their identity could be used against them. Something like that. If you had some sort of carve out, but generally speaking, no. Like they are public servants. Mm-hmm. I don't think that in their day to day, if they're just patrolling the beat or pulling people over, that they ought to be covering their faces. And here's the thing. They're not. I don't think they are. When I see local police, unless it was the pandemic where they were making them wear a mask, I don't see local police out there covering their faces. And guess what? ICE agents don't want to cover their faces either. And they didn't cover their faces until the lunatics started hanging up posters with their home addresses and their names and numbers on it. So again, it goes back to let's just be reasonable people. Now, 83% of you do believe local police officers should be able to cover their faces during interactions with the public. I imagine there's some nuance in your responses. Shelley says, yes, mostly for their own protection, but I think there are situations where it's not needed. So specifics matter. But establishing those limitations of use on them could be problematic and knowing when they're not needed as well. Becky said, I said yes only because of the insane radical left Democrats. I believe it's for the safety of the officers to wear masks. Overall, I don't like the idea, but in these times, I think it's justified. Yeah, put some carve-outs in there. And I think there are a couple in the law, but like winter weather, yeah, you ought to be able to just bundle up. You know, you're out there patrolling the beat. I'm totally fine with that. Winter weather, you know, riotous situations, I'm totally fine with that as well. Undercover work, obviously, some things like that. I think it's perfectly acceptable to have some carve-outs there. Midnight Rider, law enforcement officers not only have to worry about doxing, but some officers are also involved in clandestine operations where revealing their identity could compromise an operation, and I think there's a carve-out for that in the law as well. Travis G, I'm saying no because it just plays into the secret police narrative that some extremists on the left push too much, and also, but I think that's a popular, you know, not not wanting a police state is a position held by a lot of people on the right as well. And I don't think any of us want a police state, but we also understand that some of these activists are nuts, totally nuts. And I don't think these officers should have to worry about their personal information and their addresses being put out there in an effort to help people hurt them. I mean, that's what it's about. They want people to show up at their homes. They want people to be able to identify them on site to hurt them. Let's be honest about it. Let's see, Joe. No, but I also think local politicians and DAs should be removed for violating their oaths to uphold the Constitution. Yeah, I agree with that too. All right, one more bill I want to talk about, because I think there's a lot of, you always have to consider what's the motivation for doing this, right? What's the purpose for doing this? Now, this bill had bipartisan support, which I think is interesting that some Republicans would vote for this. So this bill, Senate Bill 6091, it bans what's called pocket listings. It says it's an act relating to prohibiting real estate brokers from marketing residential properties to an exclusive group of prospective buyers or real estate brokers, unless the residential property is also concurrently marketed to the general public and other real estate brokers, except as reasonably necessary to protect the health or safety of the owner or occupant. So it basically says if you have a house up for sale, you can't just sort of quietly, you know, go around to certain brokers or select people and say, hey, do you want to buy this house? What's wrong with doing that? And first of all, why is this the government's business? If I want to not go door to door and knock and say, hey, I'm selling my house, do you want to make a bid on it? Why is it the government's business how I sell my home, how I sell my property? And that's why I don't get why some Republicans would support this. Now, you might say, oh, this makes it harder for everyday people to be able to buy a home. Okay, but it's that person's property. They should be able to sell it however they want. Literally however they want. They should be able to stand up on a block in the middle of their neighborhood and take bids, you know? I mean, they should be able to sell it however they want. Now, I think part of this is probably Democrats trying to out rich people who are leaving the state. Trying to like say, oh, you can't escape the millionaire tax in the middle of the night by secretly selling your home to some select group of buyers. No, it's got to be out there for everyone to see. I don't know. Maybe that's part of why Democrats want to do this. So we're going to reach out to some Republicans and see why this is a bill they were interested in passing, because to me, it's just government. It's involvement in government, of government in something that they shouldn't be involved in. All right, we'll get to some updates on the socialist mayor of Seattle's efforts to fight homelessness, which aren't going well, in case you were wondering. First, could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? Could what's happening in Iran, for that matter, impact your retirement portfolio? If you're not sure, you just want to talk about what's happening in our nation and our world, join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his free live webinar, April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Bulwark Capital has a full schedule to help you cut through the market noise, AI, crypto, tech, and the real fundamentals of value investing. Plus, they'll talk about how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. This is a really good sort of chill way to get to know Bulwark Capital and Zach Abraham and hear a little bit about how, you know, national events and international events could impact your retirement. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar, April 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, totally free to sign up. Register at knowyourriskpodcast.com. If you can't make it, you can schedule your own personal Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right. Seattle's socialist mayor, Katie Wilson, is trying to take steps to bring more people inside. Totally in support of that. Whether you bring them into a shelter or a tiny home or whatever it is, I'm in support of that. As long as you're addressing the underlying reason why they were homeless in the first place. And that always seems to be the step that some of these progressive leaders just leave out. It's like, oh, the only issue is they're sleeping in a tent. Problem solved if we can put them in a home. And that's not the case. So Katie Wilson had a press conference Well, was it a press conference? We'll discuss that momentarily. Neighbor by neighbor, mayor announces legislation to rapidly expand shelter and calls on the whole city to be part of the solution. The mayor announced she's transmitting a package of new legislation to city council, which will accelerate her efforts to open 1,000 new units of shelter and emergency housing with wraparound services to bring people inside. The legislation will speed up the development of new shelter, allow successful shelters to serve more people, and allocate the necessary funds to bring people inside and match them to the right services. Now, a lot of that sounds really nice. But again, the other thing that falls short, wraparound services are important. If you're going to bring them inside, you better identify the reason they needed to be inside in the first place. But it has to be mandatory. And that's what the socialists and the progressives will not do. They will not make it a mandatory requirement of being brought inside. I mean, 1,000 units of new shelter, that's nothing. They could fill that up like this. It's nothing. And, you know, in terms of number and the number of homeless people we have on the street. But we know that these people say no over and over and over. And so you have to say, this is a condition of keep, if we just have, let's say today we got 12 tiny houses available, a condition of being one of the people placed in that tiny house is that you are doing drug treatment. You are attending mental health treatment or job training or whatever it is. And they just won't do that. The mayor also launched a citywide call to volunteer to show support and be part of the solution. Okay. The single most important thing we can do, she said, is to address our city's homeless crisis and rapidly expand shelter with supportive services. That's why the mayor is determined to add 1,000 new units of shelter and emergency housing this year with services matched to people's needs. All right. So she has this press conference where she announces this and she's in this like warehouse where tiny houses are being built. It's a press conference. Like the media is invited to it. Mayor Wilson sneaks out the back door without answering any questions at all about her big plan to solve homelessness. Our friend Jonathan Cho was there and he was not happy.
Our rates of unsheltered homelessness are off the charts, even in comparison with our peer cities. That's why today I'm announcing that I have transmitted 3 pieces of legislation to our city council that will allow us to quickly open new shelters with supportive services across the city.
Well, this is rare for me, but I got beat. Mayor Wilson quickly snuck out in the back, and I didn't even notice.
Sure. I'm just wondering what happened to the mayor. Where'd she go?
She had to go. She is so busy. She's the mayor.
Oh, well, how come she didn't take any reporter questions?
It was never the plan. She is announcing her announcement, and we'll send her the rest of the details for you shortly.
Yeah, Sage, you said Mayor Wilson is going to continue to sweep encampments at the same rate as Mayor Harrell.
I didn't say that.
Well, the Times quoted you. Did they misquote you?
I didn't say that. John, I'm not doing it on the record with you, Jonathan.
I don't say you answered all of the questions. Why can't you answer mine?
Because you're not a member of the media, Jonathan.
Oh, again, you're not a member of the media, Jonathan. Seems like this mayor, same as the old mayor. Although even Bruce Harrell, their office would let Jonathan stop the mayor in the middle of things and ask him questions. But, oh, you're not a member of the media, Jonathan. So not only am I not going to answer your questions, the mayor isn't going to answer anyone's questions. This big idea, the biggest issue we face, homelessness, I'm going to get all these people inside. But, oh my gosh, I can't be asked about it. Also keep in mind, and the reason I think the mayor did not want to answer questions is she was just called out for lying about a homelessness issue at her State of the City address. Remember, she told that story about this Ballard homeless encampment that she was criticized for not sweeping. And at her State of the City, she's told a wonderful story about this woman and her 2 dogs and getting her into a tiny house. Well, Jonathan and Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle, they go down to the Ballard homeless camp. They find that woman still sleeping in a tent. She says, no, I didn't get into the tiny house because I got there and it had black mold. And so I just came back to the homeless encampment. So Jonathan had asked the mayor, why did you tell that story? It's not true. And the mayor just walked away from him. Wouldn't answer. So she probably knew that issue was going to come up at this big announcement on homelessness. Well, mayor, you sent a homeless woman to a tiny house with black mold in it. Now she's living back in a tent and you lied about it. She didn't want to answer for her lie. And Sage Wilson, who's a radical leftist, has been in the Antifa-adjacent circles in Seattle for years, is now her communications director. No surprise, he doesn't think Jonathan Cho is a member of the media. All right, let's do a double dose of Unbelievable. Oh my gosh, this story. For the love. Is this person trans? They look trans.
I know. No one's ever said that, but I thought that as well.
Okay, let you make your own assumptions. So there is a child sex offender who is running for city council in California, okay? Name is Renee Campos. Was charged with possession of child abuse material in 2018. Ended up pleading no contest. Is now running for city council in the city of Fresno. Okay. So people are kind of freaked out by this. Like, how can a child sex predator even be able to run for city council? Here's what he says about his campaign.
Somebody who knows the system from inside out. Because me, I've experienced the laws that we are trying to reform right now.
Okay. So then this popped up. He knows the laws. Oh, I've experienced the laws. And I would imagine, you know, as a convicted sex offender, you're probably pretty familiar with the laws that dictate what you can and cannot do as a convicted sex offender. Well, here's the issue. He held a press conference right across from a school that he wasn't supposed to be at. Libs of TikTok. WTF, Renee Campos, a Fresno City Council candidate and a registered sex offender charged with child porn, recently held a press conference right outside of an elementary school. The school was forced to file a police report. How is this even allowed to happen? That is a good question indeed. How is this allowed to happen? You want to be a city council member, but you don't even know that as a sex offender, you can't have a press conference right outside of school. Something tells me you're probably not smart enough to be a city council member. All right, we'll get to national news coming up next. Although, actually, let's just talk about this right now because it's crazy. Kristi Noem is done. Kristi Noem out. As the head of the Department of Homeland Security, Donald Trump wasting no time picking a replacement. I'm highly pleased to announce that the highly respected United States Senator from the great state of Oklahoma, Mark Wayne Mullen, will become the United States Secretary of Homeland Security. The current secretary, Kristi Noem, who has served us well and has had numerous and spectacular results, will be moving to be special envoy for the Shield of the Americas, our new security initiative in the Western Hemisphere we are announcing on Saturday in Doral, Florida. I thank Kristi for her service at Homeland. So anyway, then he goes on to talk about who the new Homeland Security secretary will be. Here is, before we talk about maybe what happened here, here is Senator Mullen's reaction to his nomination.
I had to call my dad. And I mean, because it happened quick, right? I had to call my wife, call my dad, both. And it's just, you know, pretty humbling when you start thinking about it. A little kid from West Oklahoma gets to serve in the president's cabinet. That's pretty neat.
Is it weird that I think the senator, being a senator, is a more important job than the Secretary of Homeland Security? Because the senator, you're elected. It's 6 years. Like, you're highly likely to be reelected as an incumbent. And DHS, like, Kristi could just throw you away one day and then you're nothing.
That's true. That's
so I don't true. Know. I wouldn't give up a seat as a senator to be, especially with a president who's going to be term limited out. He's got 3 years left. So you're giving up a seat as a senator to be the head of Department of Homeland Security for... And all the fun stuff's already been done for like maybe 3 years if he likes you. Now, apparently there is some rumor mill going around that Kristi Noem's testimony before Congress recently angered the president, that he was dissatisfied with it, specifically with something she had said around all those commercials that she was putting out of her as like Border Barbie.
She said that he approved them and he's saying he did not, which that would be lying under oath, would
it not? I don't know. And maybe he just, I don't know. I don't think that President Donald Trump, who doesn't like to be, you know, to appear to have made a mistake. I think this is almost an acknowledgement of that. And he's saying he's given her this other job, so he's not doing away with her entirely, but it's this like brand new position that doesn't sound all that interesting to me. So I think there was probably something else going on here for him to oust Kristi Noem. I always thought it was a weird choice anyway. I believe I said this at the time. She was the governor of South Dakota. And... like not even a border state and not even a state close to the southern border. So I just thought it was an interesting choice to put her in charge of that. And I'm not saying she did a horrible job. I mean, the border is secure.
Right.
And she obviously is owed some credit for that. But I think a lot of that was like Tom Homan. It seemed like really she just was sort of a face of like,
I was going to say a pretty face.
Whole big, I hate to say that because, you know, I don't want to diminish her accomplishments. And she was the governor of a state.
But why the stupid commercials? Those were
so dumb. Whole big guns, riding horses. Like what? It was weird. I don't know.
Terrible.
So anyway, Kristi Noem is out. All right, yeah. We'll get to Florida Report coming up next. First, March is the start of spring. Man, it rained like hell yesterday. And when spring comes, if you're like my house, the outdoor to-do list is just a million miles long. And so why not get a little bit of help with it where it counts? Valentine Roofing has my back and yours when it comes to checking off those exterior maintenance jobs. I think my first thing with Valentine is to come and have him come do some exterior cleaning. Because as much as my husband likes the pressure washer he got from Costco, it's really hard to get him to fire that thing up. Not his favorite thing to do. So I'm going to have Valentine do that. And with Valentine's huge March promotion, they're not only going to take care of you this year, they have next year covered too. So this month only, you can get a free year of roof maintenance when you purchase a new roof. So you get your new roof now, and then for the next year, you've got a free year of maintenance, which is pretty cool. And then you can enjoy seasonal checkups and professional care to keep your new roof looking its best. And of course, they have flexible financing options with payments as low as $159 a month. So reach out to Valentine Roofing, get all those spring projects checked off the list. 206 Roofing for your free estimate. 206 Roofing. Make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right. Before we get to Florida Report and some other things going on, I want to talk about something that happened in Montana quick, because we called this out when Democrats did it. I'm trying to remember, what state was it that the Democrats did this? It happened fairly recently where one person, was it Illinois? Was it Illinois? I think it was, where you had one person who was the incumbent and then last minute announced they weren't going to run again and then got their buddy to file at the last minute. So they basically chose their own successor because the timetable ran out and it was all strategic. And it's totally robbing people of their ability to choose who they want to represent them in Congress. And it was a big deal at the time. We made a big deal out of it because it is. And now Republicans are doing the same freaking thing after Republicans made a big deal out of it as well. It says, this is the Daily Montanan, with just minutes before filing deadline closing, Daines shocks Montana by withdrawing. So it says, just before the closure of candidate filing in Montana, U.S. Senator Steve Daines withdrew from his reelection campaign for a third term. U.S. Attorney for Montana, Kurt Olmey, filed for office at 4:52 p.m., and Daines endorsed him in a statement that was pre-prepared. Why'd I say statement? In a statement that was pre-prepared and released shortly after. Daines did not give a specific reason behind his retirement, but released a lengthy statement late on Wednesday saying, blah, 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 serving the people of Montana has been the greatest honor of my professional career. But obviously, it's all orchestrated. So you say, last minute, I'm not running again. Your buddy is ready to file at 4:52 p.m. with 8 minutes to spare, and you already have a statement prepared to support his candidacy. It's robbing the people of Montana of their right to choose who they want to replace you. It's politics at its absolute worst. And it doesn't matter if Democrats, this is why I don't like the parties. This is why I always say the two-party system is horrible, because that is a decision to serve the party. Because, oh, it, you know, saves you from this drawn-out primary process, saves you from having to spend all this money as a party. That is a decision to serve a party, not a decision to serve people. The Democrats did it. They were criticized for it. The Republicans did it. They should be criticized for it as well.
We were both right. It was Illinois, and it was Garcia. Garcia.
Yeah, well, I was trying to remember who it was, but absolutely ridiculous. All right. Earlier on this week, we had on United States Congressman Michael Baumgartner, a Republican from Washington's 5th District, talk about what's happening in Iran. And actually, I think coming up in a minute or two, the House is going to be voting on a war powers resolution. The Senate already did, rejected it, so declined to, you know, rein in or make a statement about the president's actions in Iran. I think it'll be probably the same result over on the House side. The resolution failed 47-53 over in the Senate, and it sought to block President Trump from using further military force against Iran without approval from Congress. And there was a few, like Rand Paul voted with the Democrats, John Fetterman voted with the Republicans. There was a little crossover. I think there'll be a little crossover in the House as well. But I told you, we also were going to offer the Democratic perspective on this. So we spoke with Congressman Adam Smith. We'll have his whole interview on Sundays with subscribers this week. But we talked a little bit about, you know, when is it appropriate for the United States to intervene on behalf of the citizens of another nation? Here's part of our conversation with Congressman Adam Smith, who is the ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee.
I don't think, as a representative of, you know, the United States of America, I am going to go promising countries, if your government starts to act poorly towards you, there's a line at which the U.S. feels morally obligated to step in.
But is that different than how Democrats treated the issue in Ukraine? Because, oh my gosh, I mean, Democrats, and I forgive me, because I don't know specifically for you the extent to which you jumped on board, you know, with helping Ukraine.
I did, yes.
So what's different about that then?
Massive difference.
Okay.
We, U.S. troops, are not fighting in Ukraine. A. B. We didn't start the war in Ukraine, all right? Putin started the war. It's not like we said, all right, let's go ahead and help Ukraine, you know, attack Russia. Mm-hmm. That war was already going, and the bad things that were coming from that war were already happening. We simply decided that we would lend some support to Ukraine. I've got Ukrainian Americans in my district too. It's a very diverse district that I represent, which makes foreign policy very complicated, by the way. You know, there were Ukrainians who were like, we want U.S. troops. This is World War III. It started. Are you with us or aren't you? And I'm not unsympathetic to that, but I did not think it was a smart move for the U.S. to get involved in that war. In Iran, we kicked off this war. And I know, well, the war with Iran's been going on mm-hmm. since 79. It's the same thing that people said about Saddam Hussein in Iraq. Yeah, there's been conflict between the U.S. and Iran. But we started a full-scale shooting war that has now engulfed, I think it's a dozen countries, maybe 14. So that's the difference on Ukraine to me.
Yeah. Are you America first? Am I hearing from America first, Congressman Smith?
I reject terms like that because they mean 1,000 different things to 1,000 different people. Okay. You know, I am of the opinion that one of the central things that we need to do with our national security policy is figure out how to have less of an obligation to the rest of the world. Post-World War II, we took on a big obligation, you know, rebuilding Europe, rebuilding Japan, standing up to the Soviet Union. And I think that was perfectly appropriate. We were the only country in the world that could do it, and I think it needed to be done. At the end of the Cold War, we took on an even greater burden when we went into Kuwait, with all the other stuff that we did, because we were the world's sole remaining superpower. I think one of the keys to us getting to a more sensible national security policy is to reduce that expectation that somehow, because we have the most powerful economy in the world, the most powerful military, it is our responsibility to fix every problem in the world. Now, I'm not an isolationist, and I know the America First line is, America first must never mean America alone. Too often, in the way Trump talks about it, it does mean America alone. All right, whether it's threatening, you know, Greenland and Denmark in the middle of NATO, or threatening Panama, or threatening Canada, I mean, that has the whiff of America alone. And I don't want that. We need to be involved and engaged, but let's stop being responsible for every single bad thing that happens in the world. If we can help in a way that meets our interests and isn't overly costly, sure. But we got to stop this idea, oh, there's a problem in the world, U.S. military, go fix it.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I think there's a lot of disagreement on what does impact the United States and what sort of impacts are worthy of American intervention. And is it troops? Is it something else? Is it weapons or whatever it is? And again, reasonable people can disagree on this stuff. I don't think it's a bad thing to question when a president of any party decides to interfere in a foreign country or decides to attack a foreign country. Like, let's have some healthy dialogue about it. So we'll have an extended conversation with Congressman Adam Smith on Sundays with subscribers. It'll be a two-guest show. So if you'd like to watch that, you can become a subscriber, sign up on DividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. In the meantime, it is Thursday. We always check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
So, Venezuela happened. You got that guy. Yoink. And then Iran's going on. Huge Cuban population in Miami. And they're like, Daddy Trump, what about us?
What about us? Yeah, they have been all over the streets for a lot longer than just this week, but even more so this week after everything happened in Iran. I got stuck in traffic the other day behind 1,000 is what the news reported, 1,000 cars waving Cuba flags, waving Argentinian flags, waving Colombian flags, like all types of flags, just everybody, just wanting, you know, all the Latino community coming together, wanting attention on Cuba.
Yeah. Yeah. So they are more than just calling on President Trump to try to help Cuba, you know, become a free society. They are laying out basically the plan for him. And I like this because it's sort of, that was the issue in Venezuela. Okay, what comes next? Is there a plan in place? And so they're coming together as Cuban exiles and Cuban migrants, and they're saying, here's what we will do, right? After, if you were to overthrow, here's what we would come in and do.
Yeah, so this week on Monday, a coalition of 30 different Cuban activists, exiles, like people, Cuban exiles, and also a bunch of groups got together and signed the Freedom Accord, which is basically a plan of action if Trump does come in and free the nation, which I think Cuba's in such like a interesting position because there's so many Cubans just less than 100 miles away waiting for this to happen and in a place where they can think clearly and have a plan in place. So they did sign this Freedom Accord and they sent it to the State Department. And now they're just patiently waiting for their turn.
Yeah, it's tough. And we just had Congressman Smith on to talk about what's happening in Iran and the idea that the United States should just go in any place that wants to be free and sort of help them out. And I don't really agree with that per se. I think it comes down to what is it in the best interest of the United States and what is the ultimate purpose and what is the ultimate goal? But I do like that they're sort of like, don't just save us. We'll help, but we have a plan in place. So we'll see what I wouldn't rule it out, certainly. I mean, Trump has talked about doing that in Cuba. So we'll see, especially, you know, with the ties to Venezuela. All right. This one is near and dear to my heart. You guys may not know this. It's a big deal. So sit down for this. I am a high school state speech champion. Yes, pretty big deal, if you ask me. And in Florida, and I've always said, I think the most important skill for any young person to learn is public speaking and the ability to communicate ideas in any form or fashion. So the state of Florida recognizing that as well. What are they doing?
Yeah, so the legislature has pushed through SB 1062, which would basically institutionalize competitive speech and debate in Florida schools, not just K through 12, but also in college. So this would designate the Florida Debate Initiative, which would become the state's official nonprofit that would manage, implementing this, putting it into place in all the schools. It would establish Speech and Debate Week, which would happen from February 1st through February 7th. Which, you know, schools would put a little extra emphasis on speech and debate. It would allocate $2.4 million annually in the Florida budget. And then it would also encourage state universities to develop credentials for teaching and coaching debate.
Love that. Yeah. When I went to school, it was just speech. We didn't have debate attached to it. I would have loved to get experience in debate and stuff. But I mean, that pays off. $2.4 million, you said, is all they're investing in it to do it?
Yeah, because I think it's just, the schools are in place. So the big financial burden is already there. It's really just to try to like reinforce that they have the funds to help any teachers that maybe need a little bit of extra education on how they can become speech and debate coaches.
Yeah, love that. That's worth every penny and it'll pay dividends. And just having young people, especially in today's day and age where everything's like, OMG, LMFAO, hashtag fire emoji, stab emoji, whatever the kids do these days and whatever it means. Yeah. It's like, no, let's learn how to speak in sentences. Let's learn how to argue ideas in a peaceful manner and debate people on the merits of their ideas.
Just to kind of play off of that a little bit, one of the senators had said, like, social media rewards you with an algorithm for outrage.
Yeah.
And it makes it easy for you to see people who disagree with you as just an enemy rather than somebody with a different idea. So speech and debate would help people be able to articulate conversation around those ideas rather than just see each other as like stupid or the enemy.
Yeah, defend your ideas, make a reasonable case. And we see that so much in these video clips where these people who are out there on the streets can't really articulate why they even feel a certain way. They're just sort of whatever the crowd says, that's what I'm going to do. Someone who did a very good job at this, and I think this is driving this idea to get more speech and debate into schools, is Charlie Kirk. And Charlie Kirk, along with the president, Donald Trump, they have new roads named after them in Florida?
Yeah, so one will be in Miami, right by my house. I'll drive it every day. This will be the Charlie Kirk Memorial Boulevard. This is right by FIU. FIU was the host of one of the first Kirk Run Turning Point chapters in Florida. So that's cool. Why they chose that as a location. And then the President Donald J. Trump Boulevard will be in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, God, I can't wait. I mean, I would steal one of those signs. I mean, there'll be people tearing it down because they don't like it. But 100% yeah. People are going to steal those signs because they're going to have to do some serious screwing on to make sure that people don't steal those signs. All right, let's do one more. So there is a transgender teacher, a man who identifies as a woman. Is that correct?
Yeah,
correct. In Florida that says, well, now I have to flee Florida for a different state because I can't be myself here. So what's the gist of his story?
So the story they're telling is basically they are from Florida. They grew up here. They went to college somewhere else and came back to be a teacher. And, you know, we've talked about it over the last few years, all the different legislation and bills that have gone through, the Parental Rights Act, another statute that governs the use of pronouns and personal titles in public schools. And this person feels personally not only attacked, but also like ostracized by them. Yeah. So their students aren't allowed to call them by what they prefer to be called, and they feel like they can't teach to their full capacity because of this, so now they have to leave the state.
Fine. And they're, I know they're running a GoFundMe to go to Maryland or something.
Yeah.
Look, a couple things here. I do believe there are some people, like I've said, adults, if you want to adult and be a different whatever it is, by all means, but you can't force kids or expect kids to call you a woman. That's just unreasonable, and it seems like that's what this teacher wants. And it's like, have them call you by your name or teacher. And I think they coach something. And he was saying in the article, the kids just call him coach. It's like, great. Yeah, that's easy.
Exactly.
But you know what? If this is what has to happen and we have 50 states and they all have different policies and you get to go to a state where you feel safe and respected and whatever it is, then fine. And the same teachers can go to Florida. And then the teachers who want their kids to call them by a different gender can go to Maryland or, unfortunately, Washington State. I mean, to me, that's fine. I don't have an issue with that. Flee the state, by all means.
It's fine. Yeah. When I was reading this article, I was fully expecting this person to say they were moving to Washington.
Right.
And I was like, oh, Maryland. Okay, so they're staying on the East Coast. But I was like, well, I was waiting for it. I'm like, where is it going to say Oregon or Washington?
Yeah. And I'll also say, you know, blame your fellow trans individuals for this because they took things too far. They started pushing this radical ideology on kids, started forcing kids to call them by a different gender, to use pronouns, trans kids. They took it too far. And now even somebody who might have identified as a woman all their life, presents as a female, wasn't bothering anyone, now they're, and I don't know if that's the case with this individual, but suffering the result of that. So this is what happens when you take an ideology too far. So I think they should be looking within their own community to ask, how did it get to this point? So, all right, Miranda, great stuff.
Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial
not even
anymore.
Controversial.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream and our closing sanity check coming up next. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington and you're just annoyed with how things are going and you just need a group of people who will commiserate with you, I highly recommend becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. And of course, they're more than just a social club for your commiseration. They are also down in Olympia this time of year trying to fight back against bad housing policy. And they also help you on an individual basis. They are in your corner as you try to navigate constantly changing rules, regulations, laws, policies that dictate housing providers in the state of Washington. So go to rhawa.org. You can check out kind of the forms they have available, the kind of resources that you'd get as a member, events they have coming up, the advocacy that they're undertaking. And if it all sounds good to you, you can become a member of RHA, rhawa.org. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. All right, let's get to some comments, shall we? A couple super chats off the bat. Matthew Cook, $20 donation to the Church of Common Sense. The truth will set you free. Hallelujah. Thank you. Ronald Spins, thank you, Undivided, with a $5 super chat. On our segment, the Seattle Times is trash because it lies all the time. Mm-hmm. I just saw somebody post an article the Seattle Times just put out about how the housing market is cooling in Seattle
Oh, yes.
because of the war in Iran. Yes. It's not anything else. Capital gains, estate taxes, not warning, Ron. Thank you.
Well, specifically because it dropped below 6%, the rate, the mortgage rate,
up.
For like a second to 5.9 something. And then it went back up just above 6. And so that's Ron's
fault. Trump's fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Feral Cody Campbell. I work for the North Shore School District. More than willing to discuss this. I was class of 2016 and my sports physical did require the doctor checking my biology. Yes. So get in touch with us because we would love to know what you went through in your sports physical.
There you go.
It's like, yes, of course. It's on the list. It's literally a check mark on the list.
I mean, there are things you have to make sure happen for girls and boys as they enter into puberty. Right. That's just a thing that
is everything going on well down there?
Yes.
And then you know what? I hate to break it to you. It's going to continue for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
They're going to keep looking at your genitals. Oh my gosh. Greg Olakis, the Seattle Times isn't even good enough for my puppy to pee on. Observer, dang, all these years of women fighting for our space and equality have given it up to the very gender they fought so hard against. Not so many years ago. What happened to women?
What's funny is that they're okay with gender, like, mutilation. So then they're getting way in there if you're doing things down there.
Yeah.
But not for sports. But if you would like to
mutilate a child's gender, then look away. Look at it all you want, but examine it closely. Oh, gosh. On Washington State and the gas and the David says, I left for the Army out of high school 20 years later, retired and came home to this circus. Jerry, Washington gas prices were on the rise long before the strike on Iran. Right. And we don't have to deny that what's happening in Iran will impact U.S. gas prices, but lie about the reality that it's already so much higher.
They also fell. They also fell like 3 months ago on the
and they
other
weren't
side
out
of the country.
There being like, this is great.
Right. They weren't saying, hey, look how low gas prices are at $4 a gallon.
Yeah. Zeddy Hall, quote, I keep shooting myself in the foot. I can't figure out why my foot hurts. If only someone could figure out why my foot hurts. Washington State. Yes. On the bill giving the attorney general excessive power, Eric Peterson says, as this addresses the Fourth Amendment, could we expect Fed action to fight this? Yeah, probably. I think if it passes. At Nothing Surprises Me 2026, the last thing we need is AG Nick Brown having more power. I agree. Weiss Castle, sounds like they want to investigate people who don't agree with their progressive policies. Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
He must have somebody in mind, by the way.
Yes, I think 100%.
There must be something there that must he's looking into.
Maybe it's me.
Could be.
I'm not handing over anything over my dead body. Let's see here. Mayor Katie Wilson announcing more tiny house villages. Crafty Grandma Crispy says that's not a press conference, that's a proclamation. Yeah, she's like, gather round, ye, while I proclaim my intentions to you, and then not answer any questions from the media at all about that very obvious lie I told during the State of City address.
Yeah, has she? I was trying to think if she's had any legitimate press conferences.
Oh, yeah, I think I've seen her answer questions, but it is weird to call, summon the media, and then not let them ask you any questions.
And in fact, sneak out.
Sneak out the back door. Very strange. I know it's because they knew Jonathan Cho was going to be there and ask again about that story. I guarantee
she wouldn't have had to call on him.
Yeah, but Jonathan would shout it because, you know, that's what you do when you don't get called on.
Well, I think anybody could have said, hey, what about those moldy tiny houses
ones going to have black mold as well?
Right.
Are you going to send people into a black mold tiny house? All right. Our closing sanity check is on this subject, so hang tight. All right. If you're thinking about selling your home despite the war in Iran, I know that if you were selling your home, you might have seen that, those missile strikes and thought, no, I can't go anywhere. But if you're still going to push through and sell your home despite the war in Iran, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have been doing this for a long time, and they've really figured out a few key things that have dramatically improved outcomes for their clients. One of them is their pre-listing inspection. So they're going to go in there and figure out what's wrong with your home and what buyers might think is wrong with your home before you even list it. And that gets rid of so much uncertainty and stress at the last minute when you're hoping to close your sale. So he says that's just been great. People love it. And it reduces renegotiations, repair requests, contract fallout, etc. And then they pair that with their Listing Boost concierge service, which naturally evolved from the pre-inspection process, because they go in there pre-inspect And then you've got this list of to-dos, and Wes is like, well, why don't I just handle that for you and take all the stress off your plate? So they go in there with their listing boost concierge service, handle any cosmetic upgrades or even bigger issues, and you can work with Wes. You don't have to pay for those changes until closing. So it takes the financial stress out of it as well. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. This is pretty wild. Now, we know about the homeless industrial complex, right? There's billions of dollars going on to all these nonprofits, you know, housing providers and all of this. And if they solve homelessness, the money train stops. So they're never going to solve homelessness. They need to keep people in filth and squalor and addiction and mental illness to keep the money coming in. So one of the major players in Washington State in the homeless industrial complex is Plymouth Housing. And they have all these notorious low-income housing units that are propped up by private donations and taxpayer funds. And they become de facto drug dens. Jonathan Cho has video inside where it's literally looks like the inside of a homeless encampment, but it's inside a building. And Plymouth's like, look at us, we're doing a great job. And then, of course, there's always this massive uptick in 911 calls where these facilities are, like the one in Bellevue has been a serious problem. Well, Jonathan Cho uncovered this video from last year from the Plymouth housing director. And she's essentially, and this was during a local city council meeting where she was being questioned about, you know, their facilities and all this stuff. She essentially admits that the goal of Plymouth Housing and getting these people off the streets into these housing, you know, whether it's a tiny house or a Plymouth Housing complex, it isn't to better their lives. It's basically just to give them a place to live and then die.
If the housing is permanent, what does that mean for these individuals?
Not to sound morbid, but as soon as people move in, they're with us until they pass away.
Is one of Plymouth's housing services for permanent supportive housing to move the individuals out of the housing?
I would say that housing case management is highly individualized, just like we are all very different people sitting here. It depends on the resident. Some of them do desire to get a job and be gainfully employed and move out. But I would say the majority of our residents are mainly just trying to find a safe place where they can exist and stabilize their lives. So it's not impossible, but quite uncommon for our residents to seek employment.
Oh my God. Because of course they want them there as long as they can because they're getting those subsidies. They're getting the money that's coming in for them. They don't care, literally. Oh, well, if they want to better their lives, they can. If not, they can just live here in these filthy little apartments until they die. And then we'll replace them with someone else who will come here and will die too. Millions of dollars of your money goes to organizations like that. Absolutely insane. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Let's see. We've got a new episode of Swamp Watch coming out. We got a new episode of Politics Unpacked. I apologize. Last week, we had a Politics Unpacked ready to go. But as you know, my dog died. And then my whole life went upside down for a couple days. And so if you were like, where's Politics Unpacked? That's what happened. But we will have a new episode of Politics Unpacked this week. And then on Sundays with subscribers, we have two guests, Congressman Adam Smith, our conversation about Iran and when we should interfere in other countries in their fight for freedom. And then we are also going to have Aaron Friday, who's an attorney down in California, who is part of these efforts to get the United States Supreme Court to stop allowing schools to kidnap and trans your kids. So Aaron Friday is just fantastic, such an advocate for parents. She's going to join us as well. You can sign up, become a paid subscriber, UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We would absolutely appreciate your support. That's it. Okay, bye. Have a great weekend.